Thursday we did beach. And I tell you some information about the important things.
Yes.
So tomorrow we still normally read in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then that's Wednesday. Thursday, you can ask me all the questions. What if you have vichikitsa? Just ask me. We prepare something. That's Thursday. Yes. Yeah. Day after tomorrow. And Friday morning, I have a talk with each of you separately.
Okay.
And so you, one after the other, comes in. Yes, and I talk a little bit, and I see whether your avidya has decreased or increased. I will see. Maybe 5 minutes or something like that. Yeah, very quickly. To see, so I'm already happy if you know more now than you knew when you came in for the first time. When you came into this room for the first time, and now, if your knowledge is now better than at the beginning, it's okay. My criteria are like that. So no, if you gain something, I'm happy. I'm happy. Happy? Well, yes. And then, and then also, my purpose is also that you, after it's finished, that you feel motivated enough to not to forget it, to take it up, to remain interested in Abhidharma. You know, so motivating. That's one important thing I have to do. Motivating and maybe a little take away some ignorance here or there. I must also say what I told you about Abhidharma, different schools, different Nikayas. But I said it's the latest development, yes?
Yeah.
Yesterday I saw on the net there is a new study about Ekotarika Agama. The Agama, it's translated in Chinese, study about Ekotarika, and already in there, I saw yesterday, already the new views are adopted, you see. So more and more this will be generally adopted. But now if you use old material, not even that old, my main article appeared about this whole subject and which changed it is appeared in 2008. And I already said so about Kumarajiva's explanatory discourse about Abhidharmic literature. It appeared in Tokyo in 2008. And that's the beginning of the development. So it's almost 5 years now. But in this book I saw online yesterday, completely new publication in India about a study about Ekotarika Agama.
By another English?
No, by some Italian in London. But he translated much of the Chinese Ekotarika Agama. Yeah. But this is a study of it, and which Nikaya does it belong to, and how, which, where was it translated? It's more a where and when kind of study. Because it's a much debate about Ekotarika Agama. Is it Sarvastivada or is it Mahasangika? You know, is it Sarvastivada or Mahasangika? According to me, I have always thought it is Sarvastivada with a very strong Mahasangika influence. Because the logic, it is not either this or that, you know. It is not like, it doesn't work like that. It is not yes or no. That's not the way it works. It is Sarvastivada, yes, but also with much Mahasangika in it, mixed. It's very few texts, except Theravada, you know. Theravada is quite simple. It's like that. The Theravada building is very clear. And even if something comes from outside the tradition, it is transformed and corrected in such a way that it fits in the building. You know, So the Theravada is not a problem. The only new idea we can have is where do some things in the tradition come from? And it's not always from Theravada itself. That's the only question we can have. But in other Nikayas, very often we have to find out, well, it's a mix, very often. Sometimes the mix is so mixed that it's not clear anymore, you know?
Yeah.
If you have soup, it's difficult to separate the ingredients, you know? It becomes a mix. So sometimes, and then they often call it ekayana. If you cannot separate the Mahasangika from the Staviravada, if the mix is so strong, usually they call it ekayana.
One
vehicle. But ekayana is always Mahayana. It is, ekayana is Mahayana. If you see Lotus Sutra, that's ekayana. Now everybody agrees, Lotus Sutra is Mahayana. So ekayana is Mahayana. Another text, Lankavatara Sutra, I read this. Lankavatara Sutra, you know Lankavatara Sutra, which is basic for Zen, Chan, the descent to Lanka. It's also ekayana. It's also ekayana. So it is Mahayana, yes? So the word ekayana, one vehicle, is actually used for Mahayana. But the Mahayana, which also mixes with the Sarvastivada mainly, and that is called ekayana, but it's still Mahayana. So the word Mahayana is used for ekayana.
Yeah.
After others have taken it over and have also become Mahayana. The translation in East Asia for ekayana is a unique vehicle. Unique, not just one, you know, but unique has the meaning of special, good also, you know. Unique, something is unique means something is very good.
Yes.
So ekayana, that translates as unique, special yana. So it's a positive meaning to it. But it is Mahayana. In texts, ekayana, Mahayana occur in the same sentence sometimes. So ekayana is the altogether, and East Asia likes this very much. The Chinese like this very much. In India you have the history, Mahasangika, Staviravada, so you still have traces of separate developments, but when it all comes to China, then they call it ekayana. It's one thing, you know. The Chinese always had a problem with all that Indian literature. When there were translations of all those Indian texts from different places in India, from different periods, different times in India, and they all end up in China. So they mix up, you know, it's difficult. So the Chinese always had this problem of how to categorize, how to make a system in all those different Indian texts coming from different places, from different times, from North India, from South India, from different times. So how to make, how to see the development. This is what, not only India had this, but if you know Avatamsaka Sutra, you heard Avatamsaka Sutra, the flower garland sutra. Avatamsaka Sutra was translated early 5th century in South China, but the manuscript came from Khotan. Khotan. The one who translated it in South China is called Buddhabhadra. But Buddhabhadra was Sarvastivada from Bactria. But he came from the north, yes? Buddhabhadra had Chinese students, Juyen, and the Chinese students said, should come teach in China. So he went to China with his students, went to Chang'an, the capital of China, Kumara Jiva was there, a problem. The two people were completely different. Kumara Jiva was a bad Vinaya monk. He did not believe in Sarvastivara at all. Emptiness was his idea. So his nature was quite different. Buddha Bhadra was a strict Vinaya person who was strictly Sarvastivada. So there were some disagreements. So Buddha Bhadra left with some disciples and went south. And on his way south, he passed by Mount Lu. And there was this very wise Chinese monk called Hui Yuan, who never left the mountain. Everybody came to the mountain. There was no need for him to go to somewhere else. So he was all went there, and Buddha Bhadra passed by there and made a very, and they became very good friends. And that Buddha Bhadra kept going south to the southern capital, Nanjing, and there started translating. But because this Hui Yuan, this monk on the mountain, was very interested in new material coming from India all the time, he sent some Chinese, this student of his, some Chinese monk, to Central Asia to get more text. And one of those Chinese monks came back with the manuscript, with the text of the Avatamsaka Sutra from Khotan. He went to Khotan. Very often Chinese monks, when they go to India, they go to Khotan and stop there. They don't go further because they already have the Indian culture there. So they don't go any further. So he found this Avatamsaka Sutra manuscript in Khotan, and he brought it back to his master Hui Yuan in China on Mount Lu. And now it had to be translated, yes? So Hui Yuan asked his good friend Buddha Bhadra to translate it in the south. It was not the kind of Buddhism which Buddha Bhadra really believed in. It was not his kind of Buddhism. But because Hui Yuan asked him to translate it, so he did. But it's not his kind of, it was not his own belief. But he translated the Avatamsaka Sutra anyway, which is Mahayana, which is Mahasangika. And his own Buddhism was Sarvastivada.
Also he translated it.
He translated many things. But he translated
Vinyana Sutra is key.
He translated the Tathagatagarbha Sutra for the first time. You heard about the Tathagatagarbha?
Yeah, Buddha Matrix.
Buddha Matrix. We all are Buddhas already, but our Buddha nature is covered over by impurity. Mm-hmm. So in order to let our Buddha nature come out, we have to remove the impurity. So we are all Buddhas, and we will be reborn as a Buddha after we remove all the impurities. This is basically also Sarvastivada idea. You know, the Sarvastivada is so much, so important in Buddhism. But because people have for a long time thought Sarvastivada is only Vaibhashika in Kashmir, and with the Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma, with one and six texts, seven texts, and the Vinaya, people have identified Sarvastivada with Vaibhashikas, but actually the non-Vaibhashikas are much more influential in the development of Buddhism. The Western ones and the ones in Northern India, they are much more influential. Pure Land comes from them, from their circles. Yogacara, Sangha Vasubandhu comes from their circles. Tathagatagarbha comes from them. This is even the explanation why the three groups I just mentioned, Pure Land, Yogacara, and Tathagatagarbha, why these three idea groups of do not have their own Nikaya, do not have their own Vinaya, because they're all Sarvastivada. You know? They do not have Tathagatagarbha people do not have an own Vinaya. Pure Land does not have its own Vinaya. Yogacara does not have its own Vinaya. So, because they're all Sarvastivada. And the influence is quite big. Extremely big, actually. Especially in outside of India. Because Pure Land in India is not very important. You do not see Amitabha in India itself, very few. Maybe some in Mathura a long time ago, but that was it. Not Mathura, no. Yogacara in India, not very strong. Tathagata Garba, not very strong. But all those ideas are outside of India. Also in art, you know, in Buddhism. The Chinese think this is all Indian. But, well, it is India, but today it's Afghanistan and Pakistan, but it used to be India.
Yeah,
I was always struck when I visit temples in China. Visit the temple in China, then you have Shakyamuni in the middle. Yes? You have Shakyamuni in the middle. Shakyamuni in the middle, and to the right of Shakyamuni, you have Amitabha.
Amitabha.
So in the middle you have Shakyamuni. When you go into the main hall, you have Shakyamuni in the middle. And to the right of Shakyamuni, you have Amitabha. And to the left of Shakyamuni, you have Bhaisajya Guru, the Tathagata of healing, the medicine Tathagata.
Medicine Buddha.
And then to the right in front, you have two smaller statues. To the right of Shakyamuni, you have Avalokiteshvara, and to the left you have Kshitigarbha, the monk with the kakara of King Kiri and the six things on the, like a monk. If you think of it, they're all Indians, you know. But if you think of it, besides Shakyamuni, they are all from Central Asia. They all come from the Northwest. Amitabha, I think, is Bactria. He comes from Bactria, Afghanistan, because that's his Western paradise. It's in the Western part of Jibin. If you have Bhaisajya Guru, the god of healing, he has a very blue gem, a stone, as his attribute, you know. It's a deep blue, very blue. Vaidurya. You only find this stone in the Badakhshan Mountains today.
Pakistan.
Badakhshan Mountains is in the northeast of Afghanistan. Bactria culture.
Yeah.
So he probably is to be situated in that area. Avalokiteshvara. I think he also Bactrian. In the Lotus Sutra, everybody now agrees it comes from the Bactrian area, and Lotus Sutra made Avalokiteshvara famous. So he's also Bhaktian. And if you have Kshitigarbha, he's a monk with his staff. Completely different from any other Bodhisattva or Tathagata, you know, because all the Bodhisattvas have hair and crown and whatever, but never a monk. So he was probably a monk in Central Asia and became famous in East Asia. So all those figures, except Shakyamuni, they are all from this Western Bactrian kind of Central Asian part, you know. They never went to India, they went to Central Asia, to East Asia. The other, you still see it in the images in the temples in China, and also in Japan, by the way, where Kshitigarbha is very famous. Kshitigarbha these days, he's the monk. He's very famous. All the children like him. You know, he's a monk, so he needs a hat. So the children put hats on. All children like Kshitigarbha very much, know him very much. In Japan, two are very close to children. Kshitigarbha, who is like a monk, and so they can put something here so you, when he eats, he won't make his kashaya dirty, you know. Or he can put something on his head because he may be cold in winter and things like that. So he's very popular with the children. But also Mahakala. Very strange, isn't it? Still don't understand. You know Mahakala? Mahakala is a tantric, very bad one, you know. He kills. Mahakala is very negative force. Mahakala is the great dark one, the great black one. Mahakala is in Tantric in Vajrayana is a very terrible kind of figure, but in Japan he becomes very kind, kind of very kind person who has a drum and likes to play drum, or has this kind of you know, this drum with two things, so you can turn it around. Oh, it always like that.
In China, he said, "Manmi Manmi Hong" is very different.
It's a damaro. This is the damaro.
Dama drum.
But you can also have this.
Always move like this.
No, that's that's something else. But you have this one, a drum, and then there are two strings.
This side. Yeah.
And if you turn it, then it knocks. Yeah. It hits. This is for Mahakala. This is so he's very. He becomes very, very popular in Japan. Those two are for children. Very strange, because the Mahakala in Tibet and in Mongolia is terrible, very terrible. He kills. Be careful. Stay away from Mahakala. But in Japan, he protects the children. He's very, very nice for children. And then Ditang, the Chitigalpa. I'm sure you are Theravada people. The word Ditang is not very familiar to you, I suppose. Do you know who I mean by Ditang, by Chitigalpa?
No.
I'm wondering. Chitigalpa is Chitigalpa is he's represented as a monk, yes, in monk's robes, shaven head, and he very often has a this kind of staff, you know, which he uses on his pindapata, they say. Like you can use it for many kinds of actions. You can use it to say, to announce your coming. But you can also use it to, they say, to chase away animals. To chase away animals, to protect the animals, you know, to chase them so you do not step on them or harm them. But I always think it is also meant to protect yourself, so that animals do not harm you. You know, it's not only for you not harming animals, but maybe animals not harming you. It's both ways. This is called kakara. Actually, it's the sound. It makes a sound with those three Buddha Dharma Sangha. Yes, those three rings Buddha Dharma Sangha. And you can make a sound ringing with it to say you're coming or whatever. This is the monk who wanders around as this. So he's a wandering monk in Central Asia. He's very, if he has an object, if he has sometimes in his hand, so he has this kankara or kinkiri, because it is the sound. If he has an object in his mind, it can be a patra, because he's on Pindapata. Or it can also be a jewel, a money. A jewel, it can also be a jewel. This is how you can immediately identify him. For Theravada does not have this Shakyamuni, yes? Walking Shakyamuni, sitting Shakyamuni, teaching, preaching Shakyamuni. It's all you can, sometimes Maitreya. Yes, that's the only one. Sometimes Maitreya. But for the rest, always Shakyamuni. But for East Asia, you have all those bodhisattvas. And you can know this is that, this is that, this is him, this is him, this is him. Because they have different mudras and different things, different attributes, different hairstyle, different. You can identify all of them. Well. In IBC, you do not have a course about Buddhist art.
No.
But sometimes might be a good idea. Of course, Theravada has Buddhist art, of course.
Yeah.
But it is much more complicated in Mahayana than in Theravada. all the bodhisattvas, how to identify them, and this is. According to me, a very interesting subject. If you go in a temple, you want to know who is that, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then you have to know this is Avalokiteshvara. Why? No?
Everyone knows that the Avalokiteshvara is not that, like the female figure.
Female figure is also Chinese.
Yeah.
Chinese. Avalokiteshvara is normally a man.
Yeah,
even with mustache, big mustache, and
I never seen
even in even if he's a woman, sometimes has a mustache.
Strange.
A very fine one. If you don't know, you don't notice. But very fine. If you know it's a mustache, you can see it. It's which is not very female, right? So originally it was a man who became female in South China.
Why?
In South China. Why? Probably because of the association with Taoist female goddesses. Yes.
Goddess.
Probably. Same with Amitabha, became Amitayus.
In Japan.
In China. Long the Amitabha means measureless light.
Yeah.
But he became measureless life. Amitayus. In South China. Why? Probably also because the Taoists want to be immortal. And the highest god of immortality is the lady, Xi Wangmu, the mother goddess of the West. So it's so the Taoists' influence in South China made Avalokiteshvara become female and change the name of Amitabha to Amitayus. The problem was later, after China was united again, all of a sudden they had two words, the northern word for Amitabha and the southern word for Amitayus. Now they had two words. And the result is that they thought there were two different Tathagatas. And they went to Tibet. And in Tibet they have the two different ones. Amitayus is different from Amitabha. So you see, first Amitabha went to China, north, Amitabha went to South China, became Amitayus. China united again, so you have two names, and those two names went back to Tibet. And you had two different Tathagatas. So that is the development of this idea. But in Theravada, no Amitabha. It's typical for Bactria, Central Asian kind of Theravada. Theravada is different. Theravada was always a little bit out of the mainstream. The mainstream is the rest of India. Theravada was Sri Lanka, and because it's Sri Lanka, it remained like that. It survived. While in India itself, there was a big problem, you know, with the Hindus and the Muslims and whatever. But Sri Lanka was always, they stayed, remained until today. So that's why they are. But on the mainland and in East Asia and all other areas, it's different, quite different. So you see, I didn't know how did I come to talk about Pure Land. Oh yes, I remember now. So the Pure Land is Sarvastivada. They do not have their own Vinaya. And by the way, this wise monk, Hui Yuan on Mount Lu, who I mentioned, he officially is the beginning of Pure Land. Because he believed in Amitabha. He was very much interested. He organized the first Amitabha meeting to meditate on the Pure Land and on Amitabha. And even make painting on the wall painting. Before him, Maitreya was more popular, but with the wise monk, Amitabha became more popular. So it shifted the interest. Also painting, they painted this on the wall. Buddha Bhadra was the one of the Avatamsaka Sutta I just mentioned. Buddha Bhadra, he comes from Nagarhara, which is Jalalabad in Afghanistan today, on the western side of the Khyber Pass. And there, they There was a famous cave there, really? Xuan Zang visited, where you could see the shadow of the Buddha on the wall. If you look in from outside, look up at the caves, you can see the Buddha shadow on the back of the cave. Xuan Zang tried it. It didn't work, but after 2 weeks, he saw it. But he did not see it immediately. But there was this Buddha cave, and this is an example to paint the Buddha. So in many places, we have paintings on walls in Chinese temples showing this Buddha shadow in the back of the cave. So this is a very famous cave near Nagarhara, and this is the area where Buddha Bhadra came from, and from his area. Buddha Bhadra is a strange figure. We still don't know much about him. Well, we know too much about him. That's also a problem, you know. He's probably a son of Amartodhana. You know Amartodhana and Suddhodana, the Shakya family?
Brothers.
He's a descendant of Amartodhana, they say. So he's a Shakya. But he was... He went to North India and then to Bactria, where he had many disciples, especially Chinese, and then he went to China. But another tradition says he took a boat to China. And that I do not quite understand why they say that. Because if you are in Afghanistan, why would you take a boat to China? In Afghanistan, you just cross the Silk Road, take along the Silk Road, go east. But they say he, from Afghanistan, he went all the way south and there took a boat to China. It is possible to travel from the northwest to the south. You know, Mahishasakas do that all the time, you know. The Vibhajavadins called Mahishasaka, they go from Gandhara to Sri Lanka even. You know, there is this road. It's possible. And from there you can take a boat, yes. But why would you do that when you are in... I don't see the meaning really, Buddha Bhadra. I can only explain if he's also linked with Zen, Chan. He was a specialist in meditation. He was a Dhyana Acharya. He was a specialist.
Yes.
This is Nirvana. Nirvana called
him. Nirvana.
Yes, cannot miss that.
Yeah, cannot miss it.
So no, it's not Mount Sumedho, you know. It's
Mount
now I forget what I was saying.
Buddha Bhadra.
Buddha Bhadra, yes, he's a meditation specialist. So he's supposed to be an ancestor of Zen. And now if you look at the Zen masters, they all come from South India. You know, Guna Bhadra wrote Lankavatara Sutra, linked with Lanka. In Lanka, he took a boat to South China. Then you have Bodhidharma, who is supposed to be the founder. He also came from the south. He also took a boat in the south and went to South. So the important founders of Zen come from the south, even from Sri Lanka. It's from the south. So maybe that's why Buddha Bhadra, as an ancestor of the Zen people, probably also came from the south. That's why they made him take a boat in the south. That would be one explanation. Anyway, he arrived in the north because he had problems with Kumarajiva.
Yeah.
So there is text saying that he arrived in the north. He did not arrive in the south. But why did they say he took a boat? Probably because of his Zen reputation. He wrote a text about yoga. He wrote the Yogacara Bhumi. It's called Dharmatrata Dhyana Sutra. Maybe you heard about it. Dharmatrata Dhyana Sutra is a wrong name because it's not by Dharmatrata. It's actually, the text should be called Yogacara Bhumi. And it's the yoga of Buddha Bhadra's master, his teacher, called Bodhisena. Bodhisena had a meditation technique, gave it to his disciple Buddha Bhadra, and Buddha Bhadra passed it on to his Chinese disciples, and this was translated in China. And it's a very interesting text, by the way. If you are interested in Ashubha Bhavana, this is the best text for Ashubha Bhavana. It's a very long explanation, very detailed. Ashubha Bhavana, every text mentions it. Also Visuddhimagga, it's with 10 sannyas. But the explanation is there, but it's not very detailed. You cannot do it based on Visuddhimagga explanation alone. You need more information to do it. So and this is the best text to do that. Today, you do not have corpses anymore, but in the old days, it was easy to find a corpse. Go in nature, you will find a dead person, and you can go back and meditate upon the decay of the body. Even today, I remember on the train from Shantiniketan to Kolkata, I passed by in the morning and I saw two corpses lying in the field, you know, in the field, just in the field. So you could do Ashubha Bhavana right there, you know. But today, normally we do not have enough corpses in the field at the moment. So we use paintings. Mm. The monks uses paintings, normally 9 paintings, and hang it up and to meditate about this painting. So the painting helps the meditation. Mm. Meditation. Very often paintings help meditation, you know, not only Ashubha Bhavana but others. Also Anapanasati, Anapanasmriti, also other kinds of meditation. You paint the stages about a moon, for instance, or the syllable ah. You know, everything begins with A, yes? So if you paint the syllable A, ah, akara on the wall, you can start thinking about anything, because for sequence from A to H in Sanskrit, A to Z in English, but it's H in Sanskrit. Yeah, you make paintings, and Ashubha Bhavana. Buddha Bhadra is a very, very important figure, by the way, and I stopped talking about Buddha Bhadra. He's supposed to be the founder of Nepal and China friendship, because he is a descendant of Amartodhana. Mm. In Nepal, and then he's introduced Buddhism to a large extent to China. So he's used in China as a friend of, as a Nepal friend. Him and another one is Anika. Anika is an artist. So many interesting things to say about the, I'm not going to talk 20 minutes about the Nepalese influence. It's very interesting, but as you may have noticed, there are so many interesting subjects, right? So many. Anika is one. He's very important for acupuncture also, you know, and making images, because when you make an image, you need an image to practice your acupuncture. So making a statue, repairing a statue, is important for acupuncture, to teach how to do acupuncture. And this Anika was a good architect, and he was also used to repair statues, because in India, as you know, architecture, making buildings, and the art of making a statue is related. It's Shilpa Vidya. Yeah? So it's the same, it's related, because you have to put the statue in a room, yes? So the proportions should agree. Mm. And so when you can build a good room, you can build a good statue. Mm. That was the logic. And the statue you can use for acupuncture. So when this Nepali went to Kublai Khan, they asked him to repair a statue, and he did. And so he became very famous, and he became very famous in Kublai Khan. And he's also a Nepali. He's also from Nepal. So many more stories, anecdotes, which are worth knowing. Very few about Sri Lanka. Apart from the nuns, not much is known in East Asia about Sri Lanka. No, only the nuns. And they arrive in the 5th century. It is very late. 5th century is...
Today is the
quite late, actually. It's 5th century. In China, Buddhism from the 2nd century. So it's already many centuries before. Well, in the 5th century they came, and they are not mentioned separately, but they are mentioned in the biography of some monk. And that they're not mentioned, what kind of Nikaya, it's not mentioned. So, Sri Lankans are very proud and happy people. So they think, because they come from Sri Lanka, must be Theravada. Yes, that's the immediate logic. But it's not necessarily, you know, in the 5th century, 400 and a little bit later, there were not only Theravada, but also Mahishasaka in Sri Lanka. Could be. Now the next question is, why did the nuns leave? Did they want to convert South China to Theravada? Or did they want to get away from the Theravada? There's two possibilities. And if you look at what happened after their arrival, some years after they arrived there was a Chinese monk who translated the Mahishasaka Bhikshuni Pratimoksha. Probably, maybe there was a link. In that case, the nuns were not Theravada but Mahishasaka, going to a welcoming South China instead of converting them. Anyway, they did not convert them. They did not write. That's another problem, you know. If they really went to convert, to make conversions in China, why? And not write anything? That does not make much sense, does it? If you want to convert, you do something. You write something. You introduce your Bhikshuni Pratimokkha. You translate some text. You preach if you want to convert. But they didn't do that. We don't have any sources saying they did. Probably they did not. Probably Mahishasaka. Well, let's one more. A small difficulty in the Abhidharma Hridaya, and that is we arrived at 81, I think.
Yep.
Let's quickly read 81. Tomorrow we will talk about upakleshas. Today we see a few more. You know upakleshas? Visuddhimagga has it, upaklesha. You have kleshas, and on top of that you have upakleshas. They derive from the kleshas. They say they are the filth of the kleshas. The klesha, mala, the impurities of the klesha. And which ones? Well, we talk tomorrow, but first a few more remarks about the 10 kleshas. 81 says, know that desire, hatred and conceit may be linked to what has passed. Oh, this is the three periods of time we are talking about. Past, present, future. When the present, everybody agrees there is the present.
Yeah.
The past, not everybody, but most Savastivadins agree the past is possible, because the past was there, people still remember it. But not everybody agrees that a Dharma really existed in the past. But most say it existed. The future is a big problem. The future is not here, you know, and nobody remembers it. So maybe there is no future. So they explain future as a possibility, as something which may happen. So the present exists. The past existed. The future, well, maybe it will exist. But it does not really exist. The Mahavibhasha people, the Vaibhashikas, say a Dharma exists in past, present, future. So they take it for granted, they believe that the Dharma will exist in the future. But these Sautrantika people, they say future is only possibility, not a reality. What does Theravada say? What about the future? What a Dharma in the future, does it exist or not? Does Visuddhimagga say?
And then tomorrow is
the past.
Yes. But the Buddha himself also, he just discovered Dharma. Dharma exists in the world, in the planet, every time.
Three times. Mm. Also future.
Yes.
So Visuddhimagga says future Dharma, Anagata Dharma exists. Yes? It's because most Sautrantika don't believe in the future. At best it's a possibility, but not reality. Mahavibhasha says it's a reality.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you see a definition about Sarvastivada saying the Sarvastivadins believe that all dharmas exists in the three periods of time, this is only limited to Vaibhashikas, not to the traditional ones. And they say here in 81 you have that problem of the three periods. Know that desire, hatred and conceit, so kama, pratigha and mana, they may be linked to what has passed. So they have an object which is past. As future, they experience everything. In the future, everything is possible. The rest in both periods experience everything. Explanation, know that desire, hatred and conceit may be linked to what has passed. Past desire, hatred and conceit do not necessarily arise in relation to all the particular former ranges. Desire cannot arise in relation to all former factors because it is not produced by the unseen. So desire, hatred, conceit, yes, they have a link with the past, it's true, but not everything in the past. For example, something which is visible now is not visible in the past. It's gone, now it's gone, you know. So you don't see it now. In that case, your desire now is not linked with the past because you don't see it. But you may remember something in the past. And this remembering, this object which you remember in the past may be linked to your desire now. So it says sometimes it is linked to the past and sometimes not. As future, they experience everything. Future desire, hatred, and conceit are linked to all impure factors. Why? Because they take everything which is impure as object. So desire, hatred, and mana, they are linked with everything impure. Also in an eventual future. And the rest in both periods experience everything. The views. Five drishtis. Doubt, vichikitsa, and ignorance, avidya, all take all factors as their objects, therefore they are linked to past, to future, to all impure factors. So the others are linked to everything in the three periods of time. And then finally, as present urges are not specific. Specific means, this is a very, well, specific and general. There are two kinds of kleshas. They are not mentioned, but when some experience something specific, they must be explained as the past ones. This is actually one sentence about a very, very, very big problem, which in the Abhidharma Kosha Bhasha is explained in many pages. The problem is this: you have Samanya Kleshas, which are general afflictions, and specific ones. General ones are linked with all objects, all kinds, and the specific ones only linked to a specific object. That is the general idea. Samanya Kleshas are general. And a Klesha which is not specific, the Sanskrit word for specific, niyata normally. Specific can also be svalakshana, as it is mentioned in note 100. They arise in relation to a specific object.
You mean sulakshana?
I mean?
Svalakshana.
Samanya. You have the word in number 99. Footnote 99, you have the Indian term. Samanya kleshas. Samanya kleshas, and in number 100, you have svalakshana kleshas. Yes? So svalakshana kleshas, they have one specific object. One very specific, and Samanya Kleshas do not have that. Their object is very general. And now you can become a philosopher about what is their link with past, present, and future. And they say here, they must be explained as the past one. So they are all linked with the past, they say. And in number 2082, but we'll do that tomorrow, in number 82, it is also mentioned the sequence of the kleshas. If you have one klesha, you may quickly have a second one. And if you have a second one, you may very quickly have a number 3. And what is the sequence? How do those kleshas, be established? Finally, you have all 10 of them. So what is the sequence of them? You know, this is the problem which is explained in number 82. And then in number 83, tomorrow we will see that the Nikayas, the Agamas, they do not have 10. They have 7, as I said. And so in number 83, they will mention the Nikaya kind of kleshas, the Agama kleshas, as mentioned in the Agamas. Those are problems, and the Upakleshas will also be mentioned tomorrow. So we'll do that tomorrow. Okay. I wish you success.